Hey folks, it's Mike from Profiling Evil. I've been studying criminal behavior for more than 40 years, and one of my favorite research tools is Truth Finder. It's online, and you're not going to believe the information stored there. So if you want to know more about that new neighbor, your babysitter, or your online date, give Truth Finder a try. I'm including a special link below with special discount pricing, but you got to click the link and enter EVIL10 at checkout. Now, we're an affiliate, which means we get a small commission, but you can cancel at any time. Well, hey, folks, call it tomato, tomato. It's not the same question, though, as psychopathy or psychopathology. And I'm no expert on the topic, but I'm going to share why one of these is centered on the diagnosis and treatment, while cops are much more concerned about the personality disorder that results in lying, exploitation, arrogance, promiscuity, low self-control, and empathy. Heck, we'll even look into why there's no remorse when some violent offenders hurt other people. It's time, folks, for the next round of Profiling Evil's Academy, Season 3. Well, welcome to Profiling Evil Academy, Season 3, and this episode on psychopathy. Now, if you're one of my university students or a Profiling Evil channel member, I want to welcome you back and thank you for joining us, and thanks for your support. And if you're new to our channel, take a moment, hit that like and subscribe button, and ring the bell so you can get all of our notifications. You can also find Profiling Evil podcasts on your favorite podcast platform, and I hope you're checking us out on the World Wide Web. Well, let's start by getting the heavy stuff out of the way. Psychopathology is the study of abnormal behaviors and experiences, which differ a lot from societal norms. Now, early explanations for mental illness were influenced by religion, superstition. Even if you considered yourself a diehard skeptic, you probably heard of a few of the superstitions that I'm going to share with you, and you may have even rolled the dice on a few rituals of your own. For instance, think about the ancient Romans who believed that a mirror contained portions of our soul, and breaking a mirror would negatively impact us. Well, as luck would have it, they also believed that a person's soul could regenerate every 7 years. That's how the tale of breaking a mirror would lead to 7 years of bad luck. Well, not to be outdone, the Greeks believed that sneezing was even more unlucky, and that people who sneezed forced their souls out of their bodies. Now, yawning was also risky business, and that's why you hear folks today still uttering "bless you" whenever somebody sneezes. So if you hear that in your behalf, make sure you pause and thank those people for the blessing. Oh, and for those of you who knock on wood, just remember that you're leaning on an ancient pagan belief that spirits and gods reside in the trees, and knocking on a tree trunk was an attempt to call upon the gods for protection and good luck. And who can forget Eve, who snuck a four-leaf clover out of the Garden of Eden after she and Adam were expelled for disobedience. Now, according to psychological experts of the time, the odds of finding a four-leaf clover then, and I guess today, are about 1 in 10,000, making them an extremely rare find. So the belief was Eve took the four-leaf clover to remind her of how cool life in the Garden of Eden was, and ever since, it's been a sign of good luck and prosperity. Well, today, psychological conditions are classified as mental disorders instead of superstitions or demonic possessions. It doesn't take much effort to find stories where people use these so-called possessions as evidence that they were being tortured, and they were seen sometimes as seers. Now, it's strange to think that Hippocrates was one of the first to reject the idea that mental disorders were caused by possessions of demons or the devil. Instead, that Greek physician believed that these manifestations were actually evidence of diseases originating in the brain. The scientific discipline of psychopathology was founded in the early 1900s, and for the next 120 years, experts in the early stages like Carl Jasper and Sigmund Freud brought more clarity to this puzzling discussion about behaviors. It resulted in fields of study such as psychology, abnormal psychology, social psychology, developmental psychology, or neuropsychology. Today, experts define abnormal behavior in four ways that they often refer to as the four D's. So here's something you might want to remember. The four D's are deviance, distress, dysfunction, and danger. Now, deviance describes the idea that specific thoughts, behaviors, emotions are considered deviant if they're unacceptable or not commonly accepted in society. Distress takes into consideration the negative feelings that patients feel, troubled by and affected by their illnesses. The stress would add to the additional pressures that they're feeling in their lives. Dysfunction involves behaviors that impair the individual's ability to perform normal daily functions, like driving a car. Now, the last of the four D's is danger, and it involves dangerous or violent behavior directed at the individual or at others. The two important characteristics of danger are, is it danger to myself or is it danger to others? The term psychopathology is often used to denote behaviors or experiences which suggest that a person is mentally ill. Examples might be the presence of hallucinations or a disconnected view of what's happening around them. Psychopathology, though, on the other hand, is a disorder that's characterized in part by these shallow emotional responses, this lack of empathy, impulsivity, or these increased likelihoods of antisocial behaviors. Now, a couple of experts, Nathan E. Anderson and Kent Kill, authored an amazing paper called Psychopathy: Developmental Perspectives and Their Implications for Treatment. The authors taught us that psychopaths are responsible for an inordinate proportion of crimes that are committed, and their conning, manipulative, interpersonal style typically has a broad destructive impact on the individual's life, their work, and their relationships. The research they did on the topic suggests that the core precipitating features of psychopathology are developed before the age of 10, and I found this to be really interesting because I remember researching a predator, and I was fortunate enough to talk to his elementary school teacher, who vividly recalled that the criminal, as a child, remembers thinking that that child was the kind of kid that was going to be in trouble the rest of his life and probably end up in prison. This is all something she observed by his behaviors and his interpersonal relationships. Well, Anderson and Kill stated that psychopathy is a neuropsychiatric disorder marked by a deficient emotional response, a lack of empathy, and poor behavioral control. They again said that it resulted in persistent antisocial deviance and criminal behavior. This callous detachment and lack of empathy allows psychopaths to be highly manipulative. And while many of us think we can point out a psychopath based on our true crime exploration, experts remind us that it's among one of the most difficult disorders to spot. And by the way, folks, if you really want to hear an expert talk about psychopathy, take a moment and look at Dr. Todd Grandy's YouTube channel. This guy has a quirky sense of humor, but I'll tell you what, I have learned more about psychopathology from listening to him than in all the reading that I've done over the years. In fact, let's just take a moment, listen to this short clip by him, and then go over to his YouTube channel, watch a few of his videos, and I'm confident that you'll end up subscribing.
What personality traits are associated with being a believable liar? Sometimes people like this are called good liars. The associations between personality and deception are not well studied, and the relationships which have been found tend to be weak, but here's what the research says. Believable liars tend to be high in all three dark triad traits, psychopathy, narcissism, and Machiavellianism. The five-factor personality profile of a believable liar would be high in openness to experience. They are invested in fantasy and can think abstractly. Low in conscientiousness, they tend to be impulsive and reckless. High in extroversion, they are outgoing, talkative, sensation-seeking, and enthusiastic. Low in agreeableness, they are antagonistic. And low in neuroticism. One key to being a believable liar is to manage outward appearances. Those who are high in neuroticism cannot regulate their emotional responses too well, which does not facilitate being a believable liar.
Hey, thanks so much. Let's get back to our discussion. But here's what we should be looking for. A psychopath can appear normal, but underneath the facade, they lack the conscience needed to be normal. They might even be charming to a certain degree. You know, the kind of person that you can enjoy having a conversation with. But before long, you start to recognize character flaws that unnerve you. And you know what? If they hang around that long, you learn even more that kind of disturbs you. But usually they don't hang around that long. Experts say that psychopaths are resistant to treatment. Some of the common signs of a psychopath were documented in a checklist in the 1970s by a Canadian researcher named Robert Hare. Again, diagnoses and reliable assessments should be conducted by mental health professionals. But that said, here's Hare's list, which has stood the test of time for the last 52 years. He said, generally, psychopaths are glib or superficial. They have this grandiose sense of self-worth. They have a need for stimulation. They are the kind of people that are really prone to become bored. They have this pathological lying. I mean, they can't even help themselves. They're going to lie even knowing that everybody knows they're lying. They're conning and manipulative. They lack remorse or guilt. And they have this emotional response that's really reduced, a kind of a shallow effect. They're callous. Again, they lack empathy. They have a parasitic lifestyle. I mean, they just take. They have terrible behavioral control, and they have promiscuous sexual behaviors. In looking in their history, they have behavioral problems early in their life, and they have a lack of realistic long-term goals. These are the kind of people that are impulsive, irresponsible. They fail to accept responsibility for their own actions, and they blame everybody else for things that go on. They have short-term and often many short-term marital relationships. In fact, that's kind of this idea of the longer you get to know them, the more you see the character flaws. They were delinquent as juveniles. They have been in prison, have been out of prison, had their prison revoked and sent back. They're kind of repeat offenders. They commit all kinds of different crimes. Now, it's estimated that 1% of the male population are psychopaths. That means in a community of 10,000 people, there are 10 male psychopaths. And can't forget the females. That means there are 3 female psychopaths because they are a little bit different number, about a third of what males are. So next time you're in a room with a bunch of folks you've never met before, try not to pick out the next psychopathic predator. Instead, focus on how you can reduce your own risk of being victimized by making better choices, by choosing in a way that will reduce your level of risk than increase it. If you get a minute, go back and watch my video on victim risk assessments. I hope it's something you'd consider sharing with your loved ones. And I hope you're enjoying Season 3 of Profiling Evil's Academy. We're discussing criminal behavior in deeper detail. And if you're liking it, I hope you'll show me by hitting that like and subscribe button and ring the bell. Now, don't forget to check out Profiling Evil podcasts on your favorite podcast platform. And if you're meeting that new someone or you've talked to somebody and you think there's just something a little off, do what I do. Go over to my partner, Truth Finder, and check them out. In fact, hey, everybody, it's Mike from Profiling Evil. I've been studying criminal behavior for more than 40 years, and one of my favorite research tools is Truth Finder. It's online, and you're not going to believe the information stored there. So if you want to know more about that new neighbor, your babysitter, or your next online date, give Truth Finder a try. I'm including a link below with special discount pricing. You got to click the link to get it, and then enter EVIL10 at checkout. We're an affiliate, which means we get a small commission, enough to buy a small diet Dr. Pepper, but you can cancel at any time. Thanks for listening today. Well, hey, make sure you're going to Profiling Evil and checking out the BOLO. BOLO stands for Be On The Lookout. It's our digital newsletter. And make sure you're going back to watch some of our other videos in the Academy series. One of my favorites is Nurture versus Nature. I mean, what is it that causes some individuals to commit crime? Will you take a minute and enter your thoughts down below and take time to read each other's comments, respond to each other, and as always, folks, keep it on a professional and respectful level. Well, thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon at the next crime scene. Hey folks, it's Mike from Profiling Evil. I've been studying criminal behavior for more than 40 years, and one of my favorite research tools is Truth Finder. It's online, and you're not going to believe the information stored there. So if you want to know more about that new neighbor, your babysitter, or your online date, give Truth Finder a try. I'm including a special link below with special discount pricing, but you got to click the link and enter EVIL10 at checkout. Now, we're an affiliate, which means we get a small commission, but you can cancel at any time.